You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders and for coders about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beach, the optimistic newbie developer. Welcome to another episode of Complete Developer Podcast. Before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
Database fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I have this stored proc, and it works pretty well. But what the users are able to do is they're able to create a arbitrary set of filtering criteria, and the stored proc filters this massive table of data and returns a result.
Okay.
Sounds cool. Not so bad. There's a little bit of funkiness with generating dynamic SQL and trying to keep SQL injection out of the mix and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, you can clean the input pretty easily.
So I have to add paging and sorting.
Okay.
After the fact. And it's something I should have caught with time and attention, but I didn't.
Wow.
And so it's interesting in the Chinese curse sense. You know, may you live in interesting times. That's kind of where it is. I'm having to do a lot of work without breaking the result coming out of the stored proc. And so, yeah, that's what I'm fighting with. Getting prepared for some travel and getting prepared for trying to get all the network stuff, punched down in my server room and get, all the connections that need to be made where they need to be made, getting all my workflows for writing figured out. Which, I've discovered like in Scrivener, I had things laid out in a way that I thought worked. And then I've gotten in there and done a little bit more work. And I'm like, wow, this is awful the way I laid this out. And, fighting with the mindset of, okay, I can fix this programmatically versus like manually going through the pain of fixing it at each level, which is what I'm going to end up doing.
Sometimes it's actually easier to do it.
Yeah, but like it's when you've done programming long enough, it's very hard to walk away from something going, I think I could automate this, and going, I don't know if I can automate it, and I'm not going to find out. Like, that is the hardest thing to just turn your back on and go, okay, I've got to get this thing done.
You don't have to have been doing programming for a while. I'm like that.
Yeah, a while is like a few weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like 10 years. It's there's a point where you just, your ability to walk away from something that you think you could automate is completely irrevocably broken.
Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's
because I'm like that. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. So that's what I'm going through right now, and it's a growth spurt. That's the best way to put it. Growth spurts always come with pain.
Yeah.
So yeah. What are you doing?
Oh, well, speaking of pain and fighting, I am trying to
Get landed junior dev position.
Well, yeah, that's true. I am trying to find a way to include a contact form on a static site.
Oh man, I can't imagine what static site that is that you're having to deal with. that's unfortunate. I don't know. Like, I remember doing that in the 90s, and there was a way to do it. But the problem is that it exposes your email address to every spammer out there.
Yeah.
In like the most easily harvestable fashion possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody's going to do that, out in the open. But if you have a static site, you have no back end. You can't hide that stuff.
Yeah.
And that becomes kind of tricky.
Well, I've been looking at some various third party things. I'm trying to find one that really is going to work for me. So it's
And this is on my site, by the way, for everybody listening, because I outsource that to Beach. Laziness is a virtue right next to hubris and impatience, as far as I'm concerned. And
laziness is a great thing as a programmer, because I've come up with some really interesting code out of pure laziness, because I just didn't want to write that much CSS.
Yeah.
So I wrote a JavaScript program that did it for me.
Well, it's a virtue. And
also talking about looking for a junior dev position, let me just say, if there are any hiring managers listening to our show.
Yeah. We know a guy.
Yeah.
And, he's got He's got experience. You can get a hold of me, and I'll show you what he's done.
Yeah.
You know, I've trained the dude, and it's getting a little bit obnoxious because it's like, okay, you guys are always complaining that there's a shortage of developers. And, you know, while the outsource workers do bring things to the table, it's like we do have people here that are competent and who are interested in the field and are actually already doing things. And you guys won't hire them. Instead, you'll pay more for somebody from overseas, which is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. Well, is how this stuff works out.
I'll tell you something that's really crazy. I've been looking on different job websites, like Monster, Career Builder, things like that, Glassdoor.
I'm just going to tell you people out there listening, if you don't hire him fairly soon, he's going to go freelance and he's going to make more money than you've ever seen. So you can get in now or not.
Well, here's what I saw, and you can tell me what you think about this. So in the search criteria, I put in entry level because entry level should be someone at my level of experience.
It should be, but you need to start putting in mid-level because most of the mid-level developers are crap.
Yes, but so far as HR departments are concerned, my level of time in grade basically meets entry level. HR doesn't look at what you've done. They look at how long you've done it because that's an easier metric to look at for them. And I completely understand that. But here's the thing. If you say the job is entry level, but you require 5 to 10 years of experience,
then it's not entry level.
It's not entry level. That's the thing I'm running up against.
Yeah, there's a significant problem in this industry with hiring managers, especially at places that filter things through HR. Because what ends up happening is they have a list of questions. You know, I've taken tests at various, like a lot of different places.
Yeah.
And what I find is that the HR manager has a list of questions, which is typically like the first or second entry if you go .NET interview questions. Like, it's one of those, and you're going, okay, I know which site you got this from. Here's what the answer says on the website. Here's what the actual answer is. It's like Bible class where we went to school.
Yeah.
It's like, here's what the doctrine is, and here's what
the text actually says. Yeah.
And you end up in that situation, and you have to go, look, this is kind of a dumb question, the way it's worded, because it's full of weasel words and it's full of bad things. And I don't know. I've had a lot of interactions.
What I've noticed is those type of questions are full of ways that they cannot hire you without it looking bad on them.
And of course, part of it is too, is a lot of your people that are going for entry level development positions shouldn't be writing HTML. Like there's a lot of bad coders out there. They have to filter. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're getting 200 resumes a day, that's a person's time for a day.
Yeah.
Flipping through those resumes as fast as they can. And they filter on keywords. They do a lot of heuristics and a lot of things that make it so that you don't get past the screeners, which is screwed up.
Well, you see, my frustration isn't so much with that, because most of the places I've applied, I've made it at least through the first level of interviews. What's frustrating for me is I get to it's probably about 4 or 5 places so far. I've gotten to the point of meeting the team.
It's like you fail at seduction at the second date.
Yes.
Is effectively what's happening, which, you know, it's an order of magnitude difference. Like getting past the automatic screeners is one thing, but then getting past the team and
they all want someone with, generally speaking, about a year or two more time in grade.
Yeah, which is absolutely stupid. Mm-hmm. Because if you do have somebody that has done this long enough, they can train you to not be stupid.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a good mentor, time and grade doesn't matter. If you do have a good mentor, it's strange, but it also doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, as your mentor, I have a very hard time with this because it's very annoying to me. Because
yeah,
it's like, look, he's learning object-oriented programming. He's learning how to write clean JavaScript. I'm not letting you flounder like a code academy would. I'm not teaching you crap. I'm not filtering complexity away from you. And hiring managers are being kind of stupid here. And part of it is because they're not techies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like I'm in a position, and you know, I would love to have some advice from the community here, because I'm in a position where I'm trying to market somebody for a position that's, you know, upper junior level at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm running into is people going, oh, you can't learn it that fast because Code Academies can't teach it that fast. And it's like, well, okay, so Code Academies can't teach it that fast, so you can't learn it that fast? Is that what you're saying? Because obviously the Code Academies are the penultimate educational experience.
But if they're the penultimate, what's the ultimate?
I don't know, real life?
College?
Like actually building something?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like you're ignoring
I haven't built anything.
Right. That's why I, as a professional developer, you know, and bear in mind, I can build websites. Okay. I've been doing this since 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm paying somebody else to build the theme for my website. This is not me going, I can't do it. It's the thing of, hey, I've got somebody that's competent to do it. And there's other things I need to focus on. Like I can delegate this task to you.
Well, it's also a matter of cost effectiveness, because your time as a senior developer is worth a certain amount of money, and you're paying me.
And I can get two or three hours of your time for an hour of mine.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I'm extremely frustrated by the situation because it's just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where it's like, if some person out there realizes that there's kind of a, it's like a sleeper stock. It's like that stock that's going to go up at some point, and the people that bought it are going to be well off.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to sell that, and you can't sell it until you show the growth curve. But it's like, okay, I can't sell it on that growth curve because the growth curve is very sharp and short.
Yes.
And it's a really irritating situation. So anyway, with that said, it is really irritating because, again, like if I was in a position to hire somebody, you know, like this is what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody that has shown aptitude. They've shown things that they've gotten done,
mm-hmm.
you know, but a lot of these hiring managers are filtering things with criteria that are not appropriate for the situation that they find themselves in. And this is why you have a shortage. It's not that you're out of gold. It's that you're panning in the wrong river.
Yeah.
So with that,
let's roll
some music.
Let's roll that great music. This week for IoTs, I have something from what I call the IoTs ridiculous files, or the R files.
So when you say the R files, you're talking like Rube Goldberg machines?
kind of more just absolute ridiculous. There are a lot of IoT things out there that are just, why? And then I think about it, and I think some of the things that I would invent just because I can.
Well, you know, we have a mutual friend who built I forget what kind of engine it was that ran off of bacon grease. And he was able to use that to charge his cell phone and then order delivery of more bacon. It's like one of those circle of life kind of.
I like that. See, that's useful.
Because reasons.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes because reasons is good enough.
Yeah. So this is the Petsy Treat camera, and it is a treat dispenser and camera with and I say this in quotes, free secure app and interactions. It has a 30 frames per second HD camera with a 720p video and a treat launcher that you can watch your pets and shoot treats at them.
I think my older dog would be scared of it and my younger dog would attack it.
Yeah. My dog is scared of the 2-liter bottle. I have one of those things that you fill a 2-liter bottle up and you put it on with water and you put it on there he has more water. The bubbling noise that makes scares him. And so the way he drinks water anywhere is he does a couple of laps and then he steps back. And then he never goes back
again. Yeah, I could take a 2-liter bottle and spin it on the floor, and my dog will knock furniture over trying to play with it.
Well, see, he likes 2-liter bottles. when it runs out,
yeah, the bubbling is
it's the noise that scares it.
So I can imagine a treat launcher would be problematic.
Yeah,
but I mean that's kind of cool. So it's like it's got remote access and all that.
Yeah,
so.
you can access it from your smartphone. I just think it's kind of ridiculous, kind of like not the most useful thing out there, kind of silly, and that's what the R files are for in IoTs.
Okay, I like this new variation.
Yeah,
because my wife and I've actually been rewatching X Files.
Oh, awesome!
So that's just a neat synchronicity.
well, you know they're I don't know if they've come out with it or they're coming out with
more of them.
Yeah,
yeah. That's not why. Like we started watching it at the old house, and then we moved and everything. But
that's cool.
Most of the time, it's you know like those episodes have actually been for the most part pretty good, except when they try to do CGI, and then you're like, wow, because you forget how bad it was. You know, like on TV in the 90s, like the early 90s. I mean, you're talking pre Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
You know, level effects. It's
you know what's funny is I've been. Reading about a lot of the upcoming movies, and a lot of actors and filmmakers are going back to doing things kind of on location and getting away from CGI just because
the uncanny valley.
Yeah,
that's really what it comes down to. Is there's a certain point where things are close enough to real but not real that they're more wrong than if they were wrong.
Yes,
It's a strange phenomenon. But anyway.
That's why movies like Roger Rabbit and Cool World and things like that did okay. It was because their cartoony stuff was very cartoony.
Yeah, whereas like, I don't know, the Final Fantasy movie, you remember the first one that came out?
Yeah.
Was just, people didn't like it because it's almost creepier when it's close to right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they use that in horror films, right? They use somebody that looks right and moves wrong. And that's the, like Japanese horror films are, you know, well known for that. Like that raises the creep factor considerably.
I remember The Ring.
Yeah. And there's been several others like that too.
So what are we talking about this week?
Well, this week we're going to talk about learning styles. And this is more of a guide to kind of help programmers have a metaphor for how they learn things. And we're going to get into this because the whole learning styles thing is a little more complex than it looks on the surface.
There's some controversy there. And so I want to start off with a quote. This is from advanology.com. And I have a link in the show notes. But the quote is, some people may find that they have a dominant style of learning with far less use of other styles. Others may find that they use different styles in different circumstances. There is no right mix, nor are your styles fixed.
I'd agree with that. I tend towards kinesthetic most of the time,
mm-hmm.
with visual as a backup. Auditory, not happening.
I'm going to start off talking about what our learning styles and kind of where the concept came from and a little preview of the controversy over them. Then we're going to talk about styles of learning, and we're going to follow that up with the settings for learning and then kind of mindsets that different people have. And we'll end with individual differences and some of the controversy around learning styles and how that applies and why we're doing the episode if there is controversy around it. So to start off with, what are learning styles? The whole concept of learning styles were originally created to help teachers and presenters to better communicate with their audience. Basically, the concept is there are differences in learning modalities, and individuals have a preferred modality.
Well, it's an effective modality.
Yeah.
People prefer success.
Mm-hmm. There are several different models. Some of the main models are the Felder and Solomon Index of Learning Styles. That came about in the late 80s from previous research that was by Felder and Silverman. Also, there's the Multiple Intelligences by Howard Gardner. And then the model that is probably the most well-known, as it's the one that Will kind of referenced earlier, it's the VAC or the VARC model.
VARC sounds like it should be, it sounds like it should be a curse word in a science fiction film.
Yes.
Like a replacement curse word.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, nerf herders, something that nerf herders do in Star Wars, right?
But what that stands for is visual, auditory, reading, writing, and kinesthetic. And of course, VAC is visual, auditory, and kinesthetic.
So can I ask a question jumping in here real quick?
Yeah.
Do they actually separate reading and writing, or is that considered one unit? Because reading to me a lot of times is a lot like auditory. And I guess like I don't listen to the voice, you know, like when you're – whereas if I write something, I remember it. Like I can write a grocery list down and then throw the grocery list in the trash and remember the grocery list.
We're actually going to get into that when we talk about these different styles, but that is a very good question. And
I guess this kind of rolls into the whole thing of looking at this as a useful metaphor versus this is how it actually is.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really true. I learned in medical school about the VAC model, which we always complained that they had us take these tests and determine what our best learning model was. And then,
on a written test.
Well, and then forced us to, you know, attend lectures, and even if that wasn't our preferred style of learning. And so the reason for that, and they didn't really get into it in school, but there is some controversy over using learning styles when designing materials for presentations and teaching.
Yeah, and this actually sounds kind of familiar to me because my wife teaches special ed, elementary special ed. And so there's all this back and forth and, you know, it's like people just academics sling papers at each other like monkeys in a pen sling other things.
That is so true. Having lived in academia for a long time.
It's a method of territorial dispute.
Yes, it is.
It's wild to watch, but you don't want to be in the pen.
We're going to talk about this towards the end of this episode, but I do have one quote. It's kind of long, but it hits the nail on the head. And this is by Olivia Mitchell. And she wrote an amazing blog post about this. I got a lot of great information from her blog post, but the quote says, "Learning styles theory says that an auditory learner will learn things better when they are presented orally. But there are many types of knowledge which are hard to grasp orally. For example, the shape of a country or how to ride a bike. Just about everyone will learn the shape of a country by seeing that shape, and that's visually. Also, just about everyone learns how to ride a bike by doing it. That's kinesthetically. It is the type of information that drives how we should present it, not the learning style of the learner."
I mean, I'm very much a kinesthetic programmer. And, you know, you've worked with me.
Yes.
And he who shall not be named was laughing at me the other day because I was typing. And as I'm working, I'm sounding out the theme for Mario Brothers on the keyboard. And I didn't even realize I was doing it.
Yeah.
And you know, like the kinesthetic sense for me is, you know, is strangely effective for actually being able to get things done.
And that's kind of what we're getting at is, from the learner perspective, it's really, these are good. But what they did, the point of the blog post where I took this quote is basically that they did all this research on determining people's differences in learning styles and then assumed from there that they should be taught in that style.
Yeah. And that's...
That's where the controversy comes in, is they're not saying that people don't have these various learning styles. They're saying the material should not be based on the learning style.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, the way it's presented should be based on the material, because certain materials have to be presented in certain ways. Let's kind of get into the learning styles themselves. And as a visual learner, I found a really great infographic on this.
Of course you did.
Which will be in the show notes. I haven't said that a lot in a while, so I think I'm going to say it a lot this episode.
Well, it's amusing to me because, you know, you bring up the fact that you found an infographic. I learn a lot from podcasts while I'm driving, so it does make sense, actually, that I guess it depends on the information, and the type of information I typically consume is not easily explained in an auditory fashion. That's... The next thing is we're going to discuss the different learning styles and how those people learn and, you know, what sort of presentation of information they actually work well with and what gets in their way.
We'll start off with visual. And visual learners, they learn by visualizing information and visualizing the relationships between ideas. But we prefer charts and graphs and infographics and, you know, the very visual seeing it makes it click for us in a way. That's how we grok it.
As it were.
Yeah.
That's from Heinlein?
Yeah, Heinlein.
Okay. I was going to say, I thought that was.
Speaking of that word grok, I have seen that in so many random places. Anyways.
Yeah, I remember reading a book that was called Grokking the GIMP. It was how to use the GIMP image editor.
Okay.
And it's out there. It's actually pretty handy. It's a little bit dated at this point.
The problem that visual learners have is we can get distracted by too much visual stimuli in our environment. I think you mentioned this in a previous episode a week or two ago, really, about we were talking about learning styles and how you have trouble if there's a lot of noise and auditory stimuli, and I have trouble if there's a lot of visual stimuli because it's too distracting.
Yeah. Whereas I can deal with the visual because I can just tone it out.
And I do that with auditory. So speaking of auditory, that is our next point here. And auditory learners learn by hearing and also by reciting information.
That's interesting. I would have thought that the reciting of information would almost be borderline kinesthetic. And I guess the edges of these things are kind of
fun. Yeah, they are. And it's...
And I think that's probably where the controversy comes in. It's like you're measuring, when you're looking at this and trying to do a study on it, you're pretending that the thing has an edge.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not a transition.
Yeah. And the thing is, we'll get into this a little bit later on, but the first quote even stated, you're going to have a mix of these. And I think that's really what Olivia Mitchell was getting at in her blog post is it's not the presenter or the teacher, but the learner that needs to know the learning styles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that makes sense. You got to figure out how to get the data in. And, you know, to kind of bring this back around to the whole programmer thing, the reason we're bringing this up is this is something you have to take charge of yourself.
Yes, exactly.
You can't sit there and go, okay, I'm going to take this video course on Pluralsight and, okay, I'm not going to understand it because I'm a kinesthetic learner. And I'm just going to sit and passively watch it. Like, I never learn anything directly by watching a Pluralsight video, even though I've got the subscription and all. But what I do is I code side by side with what they're doing, and then I have it from then on.
As a primarily visual learner and secondary tactile and auditory kind of mixed, I do the same thing, but I also download their source code because a lot of them...
Well, I steal anybody's source code that'll give it to me. If it works.
Yeah.
You know, like that's not even a learning thing. That's I have control C and control V on my keyboard, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's solid, that's not necessarily learning it. And I say that, you know, of course I do actually go through it, and reading it does tend to help.
So back on point, the auditory learners tend to prefer lectures and discussion groups as well as podcasts.
See, that's weird because I listen to so many podcasts at this point. Like my backlog, I will, you know, if every podcast I listen to right now stops, I'm going to be really ticked off in 2 months.
I can't say anything on that because I have so many I listen to, but I do so much driving because I live so far out of town that I get to listen to two or three podcasts driving here.
I guess the weird thing here is that I'm not an auditory learner. Like, at least I'm pretty well assured that I'm not. Like, I don't pick things up from lectures very well.
You know what, though? You've been trained.
I think I've been trained to it, but I think the other thing is, too, is when I'm driving, I'm in a mental state where it actually comes in.
Yeah.
Where my mind doesn't wander because I'm having to focus on traffic, and it comes in passively. So that's an interesting twist on the whole thing.
That's a very good point. The thing is, though, auditory learners are distracted by noisy environments.
Well,
I would think that in certain places, and we're going to talk about this in our settings for learning, but in certain places, you are an auditory learner. When driving, you are an auditory learner because you gain a lot from that. Now, me, I have a really bad problem when driving of something's mentioned and I want to look it up on my phone, and I have to really control myself because I will find myself, without knowing it, reaching down and grabbing my phone so that I can look it up. Because I'm a very visual learner.
I have a an audio recorder for that. So I can just like record, go, hey, look up blah 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 and keep going.
Yeah, I have been known, because I have an iPhone, so I have been known to stop the podcast to tell Siri to take a note.
That's yeah.
I have tons and tons of notes from podcasts that I've listened to. Like, my backlog is in looking stuff up.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we're getting way off topic, but it is interesting how, you know, I think this is stuff that the conflict comes out of, or the,
yeah,
the disagreement, because it's, you know, this thing is a metaphor and it's intended to actually help. And then people say, as opposed to it being a thing that bears meaning, which is what metaphor means literally,
yeah,
in the Greek, it's a thing that is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two different things, as it were.
I also knew that these two were going to be the ones that we talked about most, because we hit on these a lot. Next is tactile learning. And these are people that learn by doing, by movement, role playing. We did a lot of role playing in different areas, in sales school and sales conferences. In medical school, you know, you have anatomy lab where you're basically dissecting a human. And then you go to a conference and you're doing things like practicing putting in IVs. And one of my favorites, to be honest, was we got to put in a central line using ultrasound for guidance. It was really cool. It was. And then suturing clinics and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of that involved, yeah, because they're trying to hit a little bit of everything.
Well, and you and I did martial arts, and the effective arts, at least for me, have always been very kinesthetic in the way they taught.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, okay, I can do this wrist lock because I saw a dude over here do it, or dude explained it to me. Like, those never work. I cannot ever get that. Like, you can do that a million times in front of me, and it's not going to click until I do it.
Well, that was one thing that you even said way back in the day, because I started taking some other martial arts classes, and you were like, yeah, it's really great because you can see someone do something.
Oh, yeah. Dude, like, you know, if you ever go to anything with me, like, I let Beej observe what's going on, and then he can switch that to kinesthetic for me.
Yeah.
And so it's like I have Cliff Notes walking around with me.
Yeah, so true.
Like, your other, like, your alternate identity in the internet should be Cliff Notes. That should be your name.
That's not a bad idea, but I like Bowtie Beej, to be honest. All right, so these people with tactile learning, like Will, prefer to be hands-on and experimental. And this is one of – I really like this too. I mean, the whole IoTs thing is because I like tinkering.
Yeah.
And Will's fascinated by it too, but he doesn't have the time with everything going on in his life. So when we first started the podcast and I suggested it, he was all for it because he wanted to hear about it, even if he couldn't do it himself.
Yeah. And if he ever gets stuck, maybe I get an opportunity to help. Maybe.
Yeah.
Hadn't happened yet, but you never know.
The thing with people who are purely tactile learners, they do tend to have more difficulty with conceptual learning.
Yeah.
Well, like, with things that can't be manipulated.
Yeah, although if they've got the visual side, a lot of times that goes away a little bit, because the visual side, like, it's almost like using a GPU for computation, you know, the graphics processing unit.
Yeah.
You know, we have evolved to be able to work on a 2D plane, basically, and chase animals around.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get things into the point where you're actually using that facility of your brain to explain things, it makes a whole lot more sense. Like, evolution really started clicking for me when I understood it as an optimization problem within a problem hyperspace.
Huh.
And multidimensional hyperspace, which is seems like the absolute worst way to look at it, because it's like, hey, we've got this nice, you know, complex biochemical / statistical mess over here. Let's add linear algebra to it. But that's when it clicked for me.
Well, you know what? That's, like I said, there's a lot of individual differences, even beyond. These are, like you said, these are models.
Yeah. It's the thing that bears information. It's not information.
Yeah. And finally is the read-write. And the important thing to understand here, and this is what I learned in doing the outline for this episode, is this is not a visual tactical combo.
Yeah.
This is people that learn by literally reading and writing.
Yeah, it is a weird variant. I think I kind of have this a little bit.
I do too. I'm a visual learner, and I also read a lot.
I read constantly. Like, I mean, I don't watch TV.
Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, other than like X-Files and Game of Thrones, that's it. You think about when the last X-Files came out. You know, like, I'm running out of them, so.
Yeah, I watch Doctor Who which if you didn't know that and listen to the podcast regularly,
you're not an auditory learner.
Exactly.
We can clear that off the table right there.
Well, I watch Doctor Who and I watch the Marvel stuff, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And oh my goodness, the first Agent Carter miniseries was amazing. The second one blew the first one out of the water.
Huh.
It's like they just out. Like my dad and I both watch it. A lot of times we get together and watch it together. It's kind of our thing. But it keeps getting better. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it started off pretty good and it just kept getting better and better and better.
It'll be nice to see a TV series that's actually like that, because most of them seem like they get to like the third or fourth season and they start flailing around.
Well, one thing you'll really like about it is it interacts with the movies.
Ah, that will be good.
As in the movies, the Avengers movies make more sense after seeing this TV show.
Huh.
Yeah.
So, you know, our next thing is discussing settings for learning, because it's almost like your learning styles as far as what sensory organs they're coming through, which is mm-hmm. effectively what this is.
Yeah.
That's one axis, and the other is what sort of settings
yes.
you learn in, which I think is kind of part of the problem with this whole thing, is it's actually a multivariate equation and they're treating it as a single variable.
Mm. Yeah, I actually found the first quote I had.
I completely thought of that in spatial terms.
Yeah.
As if they're looking at a plane when they really should be looking at a cube.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your first setting is your social setting. People that tend to be more social learners, they learn best with interactive presentations, question and answer sessions. They prefer to learn in groups.
Yeah. And I'm a very social learner.
Yeah. Well, you're also extroverted.
I am. Yeah. It kind of that ties into, that does tie into it. And
well, and you know, one of the characteristics of this, which is, you know, you tend to be outgoing and may stray off topic in a group, which is totally not you.
Never. Not at all.
For anybody that completely missed the sarcasm there, it was there, bro. Whereas I tend to be more solitary, which is the next type, mm-hmm. and they learn best with self-study. They prefer to know the material before discussing it.
My ex-wife was like this.
Yeah. And of course, being uncomfortable in discussion groups, I'm really not at all. So like,
you're an outgoing introvert though.
Yeah. So I'm one of those weirdo,
the thing is, this is a maybe uncomfortable in discussion groups.
Yeah. I'm that weirdo that's in the overlap on the Venn diagram. So
yeah. And also, these are solitary learners. Going back to the second point, they prefer to know the material before discussing it.
Yeah. I hated that in school. We had a teacher that she would give us a programming assignment and then immediately start telling us how to do it. And there were three of us that were like me mm-hmm. in the class. And it was only three of us. And we're just like, no, stop. We're going to get up. We're going to go. We can't handle this.
Yeah.
Because we're like, just tell us about it tomorrow. Give us one day to work on the assignment ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that, and the class was supposed to be over the summer. You know, it's like 2 months.
Yeah.
We were done in like 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
With all the material. And she was just like, what do you want to learn now?
That's kind of cool.
Because all three of us had optimized our learning strategies.
Yeah.
And we knew that, hey, like, this doesn't work. This really screws us up. Don't do this.
Hey, we should present that as a case study for a later point. We'll get into that in a minute. But, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Finally, this isn't really a learning style so much as it's important to your learning style. And I put it under settings for learning because it fits there. And that's location.
Yeah.
This can have a big effect on your ability to learn.
Well, it's partially about managing distractions.
Yes.
And also managing sensory input, because some of that is sometimes people can actually do well off the energy of a coffee shop.
Like me.
Yeah. Whereas I go in there and I'm like looking around going, okay, there's, you know, like any coffee shop that's going to, you know, handle some kind of neckbeard like me coming in there is going to have a bunch of weirdos in the place anyway. And I'm looking around going, I'm like looking at all the people. And so I don't do well at all. But whereas you do, and so sort of moderating that, you know, it's the social ability, and it's also, you know, the level of distraction, and it's also the learning style. So you've got at least three variables in the equation.
Yes, that's very true. And when I was in med school, I used to study at Starbucks.
Well, you did that in college too. Well, not Starbucks because you were a little bit more broke.
Yeah.
You studied at cheaper coffee shops that had better beer.
True that. Well, everybody's got better beer than Starbucks. They don't have beer at Starbucks, but
by default.
Yeah. But I got so well known by the people that worked there, because I'd go in and I'd buy two or three cups of coffee over a day of sitting there studying. And I wasn't, you know, the big thing is if you're gonna go to a place like that and sit for hours and study or work, don't be a problem.
Yeah.
Be a part of the furniture. If they don't have to worry about you and you're friendly to the staff, they'll start bringing you drinks that they made wrong and people didn't want. Or when they're baking something and they bake one too many, they'll bring you the food.
And you can do that in a coffee shop, whereas I can do that in a sushi bar.
That's true. Yeah.
Because sushi places tend to be quieter.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know what it is about the whole, you know, it's a Japanese cultural thing, but it's like the people in there are quiet and they're doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I work, you know, if I have to go work on something, that's an option for me. Now, I typically come home because it's also quiet here.
Yeah.
And if you set me down in a sushi restaurant, like I can eat sushi till I'm broke.
Yes. So, I remember college.
Yeah. So the next item is learning mindsets. And, you know, people have got a number of different ones. Active learners. And this, I think I fit into this category. You know, they learn by manipulating objects. They prefer physical experimentation. Mm-hmm. On, you know, whatever they're working with, and they can get bored or fidgety in pure lectures, which yes. I'm probably an extreme example of this because I have a hard time watching movies. Like yes. I'm at that level where it's very difficult for me to sit still for 2 hours and just absolutely do nothing other than have information passively fed to me.
Mm-hmm. Next is the reflective learners, and these learn by analysis. They prefer to think through problems and evaluate their options. The trouble they have is in making quick decisions when not fully understanding the material.
Yeah, I know quite a few people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be that way, but then I don't know. It's not that I really got over it. It's that I found a better strategy.
No. Now, the next two I have is actually a combination of four learning styles. But they were so similar, I thought, you know, let's just put them together. And I think it worked out with the way I named them. But this is detailed learning mindset. And these people learn by having information presented kind of linearly or in an ordered manner. And they prefer concrete, practical, procedural information. My ex-wife was a lot like this.
I can see that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people, I have a hard time dealing with her that way.
Yeah. Generalizations can be a big problem for these people.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all procedures.
Yeah.
And it's if this, then that. And sometimes the category is not the same as the type.
You and I joke about being pedantic nerds.
Yeah.
But the level of pedantic in a detailed learning mindset.
Yeah. It's not something you play with.
Yeah. And then on the other end of that is the overview learning mindset. And these kind of learn by a holistic or systematic approach.
Yeah. And this is something that I've shifted into more recently, mm-hmm. like in the last, you know, I would say the last 4 years is more of a tying the bigger pieces in together mm-hmm. and like getting the gestalt of a system.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that before. And I really don't know why that shifted, but
The overview mindset prefers conceptual, even innovative and theoretical information. And the issues that they can have can be they'll get bored. And I fall into this. I've always fallen into this. But we can get bored or distracted when focusing on too fine a detail.
Well, yeah, because you want to know why, not what. It doesn't motivate you otherwise. Like I get that.
That's a great, I didn't think of that, but that's a great way to put it. The detailed mindset is the what and the overview mindset is the why. And so finally, we're going to talk about some of the controversy and some of the individual differences that people have. First off, debunked. There's a question mark after that. basically, the research has consistently shown no significant effect in learning styles when used to design teaching or presentations.
I'm a little concerned with the, and bear in mind, I have not looked at these studies, but I've actually read, you know, there was some bunch of pedantic nerds discussing this on Slashdot at some point in the past, and I vaguely remember it. But what bothers me about this is I feel like there's too many variables to control for. They're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, we've learned that people that are, you know, people don't learn calculus as well if they're visual learners. Like, they're still, you know, we can teach it to them this other way and they still don't learn it as well. It's like, well, it's highly symbolic and abstract information. Like, it's going to be really hard to get a study that effectively covers this because it's a massive multivariate equation.
You know what's funny? Is
and I just completely expressed that in my own learning terms.
I'm a visual learner, and I did a lot better in calculus than I did in geometry. You know the crazy thing? I had the same teacher. You know why I did better in calculus than I did in geometry?
Because they had to show you visually, because otherwise it was impenetrable.
He wanted to teach calculus. He had to teach geometry. Huh. That made... He and I have talked about it since we're still friends on Facebook, even. Good grief. I don't know. He may be listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
But
it's always a weird feeling, isn't it? Yeah. You know, and the thing is like after I think I got completely out of college before I realized this. But what screwed me up in calculus and some of the higher math that made it harder than it had to be was the Greek symbols. Because I focused on the detail of, okay, is that a delta or is that a mu? I mean, okay, I can tell the difference between a delta and a mu, but
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it almost forced me to a level of detail that was not appropriate for the problem I was trying to solve. Mm. And if I replaced those Greek letters with hiragana from Japanese, I could solve the problem just like... And it's the stupidest possible thing. I'm like, okay, why is this my problem? Like, it's like it was more of a distraction issue than a learning style issue. It was, yeah. I didn't take Greek.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have another quote from Olivia Mitchell. And guys, if you're interested in going beyond kind of like the general information that we're providing, definitely read her blog post. It is really good on why learning styles shouldn't be applied the way that they are applied in designing material, but should be applied in an individual basis on how you yourself.
Well, and I can speak to this because my wife has talked about this, you know, teaching special ed.
Yeah.
And the way that the learning styles thing is presented is presenter centric, not observer centric.
Yes, that is the biggest problem.
It's like, okay, we're completely looking at this from, okay, the teacher has to do kinesthetic, and they got to do video, visual, and audio. And so, no. That's on the student to figure out how to get it into that format. Like,
yes, that's exactly what they're saying. That's what the research says.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, like, just bear in mind that, like, and this is going to sound deep and extremely meta, but again, I'm putting this in the visual learning thing, so you'll probably get it, hopefully. If you take a sunflower and you're growing it out in the garden, what does it do? Its leaves grow orienting to the sun.
Yes.
The sun doesn't have the responsibility. The leaves do. Like, you want to receive this information, point at it in a way that works for you.
Wow, that is a great way of putting it. I'm going to remember that.
Because molten ball of fire in the sky doesn't care.
You know... You do realize that my sister that is a teacher.
My sister is a teacher, and my mom was a teacher, is going to be a teacher again. My mother-in-law is a teacher. My brother-in-law is too.
My sister that is a teacher, her favorite flower is sunflowers. So I am when we're done with this podcast, going to be texting her with that metaphor because she's going to love it. So the quote I have from Olivia Mitchell is, rather than concern ourselves with the preferred learning style of an audience member, we should think about the modality that best suits the content.
Yeah, because that's your responsibility as a presenter.
Yes.
The responsibility of the audience is to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, both of those things have to kind of be in play because a communication system is two-way.
Yes. That's exactly the point they're making. And this is cool. I found a website that is a $5,000 reward for research proving that learning styles, when applied the way you were talking and I've been talking about how they are typically applied, work. This is when taken into account in designing teaching materials, not when taken into account by the person learning, you know, because they make a very big distinction between individual differences in learning, which are real.
Yeah.
And that the research shows that the presenter or the teacher using different learning styles doesn't make a difference. What makes a difference is really what the research has shown is it's what Olivia Mitchell said. It makes a difference based on content, not on the learner.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a classic example of measuring the wrong thing. You're sticking the thermometer in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Effectively, and then going, hey, the temperature's low. Well, no, idiot. You stuck it in the, you know, you put it on the table. Yeah. You know, it's like, of course it's low.
So the main point with this is that while learning styles as they were developed for teachers and presenters have been kind of debunked, or they've lacked the ability to prove their effectiveness.
Well, they're not explanatory from the end of a teacher.
Yeah. They're still useful for individual learners.
Yeah.
And that's why I went ahead with this episode when I did the research and found this was, well, the episode isn't for presenters. This episode is for you guys, for our listeners, for other developers out there who are going to presentations and who are learning. And so I kind of want to close out now that we've discussed this with.
Can I add something though?
Yeah, go ahead.
If you are presenting and you're like, let's say I'm explaining something to you, right? I can figure out that you're more a visual learner based on how you say things. You'll say, I see XYZ.
Yeah.
Whereas I'll say, I feel XYZ. If you notice, if you deal with an auditory learner, they'll say, I hear. Like, people will tell you how they learn. And that's part of this whole thing is you're also telling the presenter.
Dealing one-on-one.
Yeah, it's completely different than in a classroom.
It's completely different. But the focus of what I was getting at with this whole episode and the way I designed it is to get to this point, and that is, how can these learning styles help you as a developer, as the attendee, as the student, to better learn?
Yeah, and you got to figure out a strategy that's actually going to work for you based on how you take in input.
Yeah, well, this is why we mentioned the preferred style, the way each one learns, and what can be the distractions. And it may differ depending on the material, which we talked about with podcasts for Will, which he's not generally an auditory learner, but in.
Well, at least I've characterized myself as such.
Yeah. In the location of driving.
Yeah.
He becomes an auditory learner.
Well, it's almost like I shut off the other input because I'm reacting when I'm driving.
Yeah.
And.
Now there are a few online quizzes, and a lot of these have been, there's a lot of negative about them.
Well, it's like online IQ tests.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I've both taken them, and we know they're optimistic.
Yes.
At best.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, like the scores I got on the online tests that I've taken for IQ are pretty bad. So, like, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, okay, take this with a massive, like an ocean full of salt.
Yes. Yes. Before we close out, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
So in this week's Tricks of the Trade, we're going to talk about stealing code. And by stealing, I don't really mean stealing as in actual theft. But it's important to realize that Google is your friend. And a lot of times there are people that are smarter than you that have already built something. And they can either give you a beginning point or enough information to actually go forward with something. And sometimes you'll actually find good stuff. It's okay to do that. There's a lot of code out there that's kind of offered out to everybody if they actually need something to help them with a particular problem. And it's completely okay to take that because it's offered. You know, this is given to you. You'll find answers to all kinds of questions on places like Stack Overflow, MSDN, Reddit. Reddit's a good place for code, surprisingly good. You used to find things on Express Exchange, and although they've kind of gone downhill over the years, if somebody's offering you code for free that actually works and you can understand it, there's not really a moral dilemma in taking that code and using it. Again, this is one of those things where if it's offered for free, like, don't, you know, obviously you don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth, as the old phrase goes, you know, because the code is going to have whatever problems the author created in it. But at the same time, it's not worthwhile to necessarily ignore the value potentially that code offers. And so I just kind of want to encourage people to, you know, to look at online sources of code and just, and to see if these actually meet your needs, because a lot of times you will be shocked at how much stuff you can actually find that you don't have to write yourself. And I mean, this is the underlying premise with open source, is that information is free. It's more like recipes than it is like anything else.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at www.completedeveloperpodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.